on The Bookshelf with your host, Dave Doug Kirby.
I had a magnificent opportunity earlier this year to read something which was brand new to me. I've been in radio my entire adult life, and I'm fascinated by World War II. And I knew that C.S. Lewis did a series of talks on the BBC by their invitation during World War II. In an effort to build up the faith of the people of the UK when they were in a time of great distress. But there was somebody else who had the opportunity to do something similar, except even a grander scale, and that was Dorothy L. Sayers. She wrote a series of plays, and we're going to talk about those plays, which is particularly appropriate for today, Christmas Eve. We're delighted to welcome Catherine Ware, who is the editor of The Man Born to be King. This is the Wade Annotated Edition from InterVarsity Press Academic, IVPacademic.com. Catherine, I just was amazed, first of all, at the circumstances surrounding all of these plays and the fact that this series of plays took place on the BBC, which was admittedly religious-friendly, but not a religious radio station back during World War II. There's a lot of background that you can give us, so take as much time as you need to tell us about it. But first of all, let me ask, how did you get involved with this project?
Sure. So this book had its first sort of roots in my PhD dissertation, which I did at the University of St. Andrews in Scotland. And so I focused on how Sayers used the Gospels, the four Gospels, and also theology within these plays. And so being able to put that information into this format has been so satisfying because now that information is useful to others. So this particular edition has footnotes with all the scripture references, because when I first read the plays, I thought, now which Gospel is that story from? And so then now you can see how she uses the Gospels, and sometimes she borrows details from each of them when there's a scene that appears in multiple Gospels. And then also on their side notes as well, so people can get little snippets from her letters where she might explain how she uses a character or what she was thinking. Also some of those wartime tidbits, too, that sometimes, you know, are not clear to us now, but to her original audience in the 1940s, they would have known, for instance, what she meant by the members of the Sanhedrin acting like the French bishops under the Nazis, right? So we think, whoa, wait, I don't even know what that means. So I have a little explanatory note for people so that you can keep reading right along and get your questions answered as you go. It's kind of like the backstage tour of the plays, alongside the full text of all 12 plays.
Well, now, these plays were performed once a month on the BBC over a year's time, correct?
Roughly. So the first one was broadcast on Christmas Day, 1941, and the last one was October 1942. So they were spread over the course of 11 months. And I think originally they had wanted to finish the series by Easter, because the last play is a resurrection play, of course. Mm-hmm. But things got slowed down because there was a little bit of a controversy. If you think of it in terms of today, like with the series The Chosen, there are some people that love it and some people that are like, I don't want someone else to put an idea in my mind of what this scene looks like in the Gospels. I want to use my own imagination. But at the time, there were also a lot of people who thought that it was offensive for someone to portray Jesus. And so there was a controversy around this. And so the production kind of slowed down because there were a number, like a committee of clergy people who read the scripts in order to sort of make sure everything was okay. Now, they had very little to say, actually. It was just a kind of check and balance for the sake of public, some of whom were very concerned about this. But it's because of those letters back and forth with the members of the committee and with the people at the BBC and Sayers, where she actually explains a lot of what she's thinking behind. So those actually are very exciting letters to read, and some of those appear in this edition, sections of them, and that really helps the readers understand what she was thinking and why she made some of the choices she did.
I was very interested in all the hoops that she had to kind of jump through. One of them that you mentioned, that up until this time, apparently on the BBC, Jesus's voice was not allowed to be portrayed. That was considered to be demeaning to the deity, and therefore he could be alluded to as in say, a play based on the other wise man or something like that, but not his voice was not heard specifically, correct?
Right, and that wasn't just specific to radio. What had happened after the time of the Reformation, you know, I think pre-Reformation in England, you had what's called the mystery plays, where, you know, there are all kinds of biblical scenes being portrayed, including any during the life of Christ. But after the Reformation, there were a series of laws, which are kind of like blasphemy laws, where it became illegal for anybody to portray a member of the Holy Trinity on stage. And that was a direct reaction to the mystery plays of the Middle Ages. And so these laws continued up until just before World War I. There was a change in that where you could actually have Jesus be presented, but you had to have permission from the Lord Chamberlain in the government in order to have that as part of your play. So it was still very rare for that to happen. And still there were a lot of people who felt like that was irreverent, that it was kind of, impersonating Jesus, so to speak. And so, you know, a lot of these people, it was within their lifetime when those laws changed. And so the BBC actually asked permission of the Lord Chamberlain for this. Now, radio was slightly different than live productions, but as you say, it had not been done before. You know, of course, there had been, there were actually a lot of religious services that were broadcast on the BBC, church services and sermons and stuff where, you know, there would be scripture read aloud, but, you know, that's different than an actor portraying Jesus. The only real example before this was from, there was a play series on the life of Paul and called Saul of Tarsus, that, you know, of course, in his conversion on the road to Damascus, the voice of Christ speaks to him. But that was, you know, quoting directly from Scripture. So what Sayers is doing here, you know, she's dramatizing Scripture, which is slightly different. She puts other things in Jesus' mouth. In an early letter, she says, well, Jesus has to be able to say things like, good morning and thank you. You know, we don't have him saying those things in the Gospels, but we have to show that he's a true human being, as well as God, and so I need to have that kind of dramatic license. So she actually made that a condition of her writing these plays when they were commissioned by the BBC.
Were they concerned that this would be sort of a coarsening? That sort of seemed to be a vibe that I was catching, that there was concern, at least initially, before they heard the first play, that it would be demeaning portraying Jesus as a guy.
Right. I mean, I think, you know, there's always a kind of a, you know, real range of opinions, but, you know, there was a real vocal group of very conservative Christians who were concerned that this was going to be irreverent. And you have someone like Dorothy L. Sayers, who's both, you know, most known for writing detective stories by this time. That's what she was most known for, even though she had really moved into writing a lot of nonfiction essays and plays for stage. But people best knew her as the writer of the Lord Peter Wimsey mystery novels, and so they thought, well, what is a novelist going to do to the Gospels? It's going to be terrible. So they hadn't heard what she was planning yet. And so there was a real big protest, even. There was a letter-writing campaign by a group called the Lord's Day Observance Society that, you know, were writing these letters begging the BBC to not air this series. But once people actually heard the plays and saw how she was treating the material of the Gospels with a real respect and reverence, that people thought, oh, okay, I can see what she's doing. You know, she wasn't going to just play fast and loose and write anything she wanted or, make up stories about Jesus or something. She was going to use the material there, but just present it in a way that helps people really get into the scene, you know, really imagine themselves there in the Gospels as part of those wonderful stories that were well known to them, but presented in a way that feels fresh and new and that they're really a part of the scene as a listener.
We're talking to Catherine Ware, who is the editor of the Dorothy L. Sayers series, The Man Born to Be King, Wade Annotated Edition from IVP Academic. This is not her first thing that she's ever written. She has her written work has appeared in several journals and publications, including Logos, a journal of Catholic thought and culture, which she also is the managing editor of Logos, the Journal of the Marion E. Wade Center, and the Journal of Inklings Studies, and Transpositions, Theology, Imagination, and the Arts. The Inkling Studies, of course, folks who know who the Inklings are immediately going, oh, that's cool. For those that don't know who the Inklings are, they were a group of people of very, very talented writers, C.S. Lewis, J.R.R. Tolkien, among others, who got together and hung out and talked about the things they were working on. And they were a support group and a critique group and friends all rolled into one. Dorothy L. Sayers, I'm thinking that, like you said, a lady best known for writing detective fiction, she did write theological books as well that came after The Man Born to Be King. She was a really interesting character, a really interesting person. She was very respectful in how she was dealing with all these people, although in her private letters you get the sense that she does get a little frustrated from time to time that they are so particular about everything. But I get the feeling that once, that just like with C.S. Lewis, once the works got on the air, people mostly thought, oh, this is wonderful. Let's just keep doing more of this. And the theologians and religious leaders that had concerns before were greatly diminished once they realized what an impact it was having on the population. One of the things you write about in the book is all of the outpouring of connection between the listeners, the average listener, and the BBC. Could you tell us a little bit about that?
Sure. Included in the annotated edition is the original introduction by Dr. James Welch, who was the head of religious broadcasting at the BBC. And his introduction quotes many, many letters from listeners talking about what these plays did for them personally or for their community. Now, teachers, you know, in schools would say, you know, I had children coming and bringing their Bible saying, show me where this story is, because I heard it on the radio last night. Or people would write in and say, you know, these plays are kind of changing the atmosphere in our home. It feels like Jesus is here among us, you know, which is not a small thing. You think during the war, there was so much anxiety going on. You know, many people had loved ones who were serving in the services or were away working at factories or on farms. It was a time of real high anxiety. And so to have this kind of a thing for people to say, you know, it's really... you know, strengthening us to hear these is that's great. And then, you know, people also write with questions. They might write in and say, I mean, one of the most interesting things Sayers, you know, it's not one of my favorite details, but she does continue to kind of describe Jesus as having a kind of golden beard. She's trying to give people you know, a picture of Jesus in their mind. But a listener wrote in and said, everybody knows Jesus didn't have golden hair. What are you talking about? And so she, you know, she explains herself. She said, well, you know, you're probably right. Of course, you know, living where he did and as a Jewish man, he probably had dark hair. But I'm, you know, I'm also trying to help people connect to famous paintings, you know, other things, just helping listeners connect to visual things so that they can really imagine it. So she said, but, you know, but you're right. But I was, you know, kind of, you know, connecting with famous works of art there, helping to give people a picture. But, you know, we don't have to like her choices, but it's nice to know that she had something in mind.
Right.
Even if we disagree with her. So some of those things are nice. So, you know, the kind of little tidbit that I put in the side margin, because I wondered about that. You know, in my first version when I was taking notes as I was beginning my PhD, I would write, oh, Dorothy, every time she'd say that. because it seemed kind of silly, but at least she has something in mind.
Yeah, there was a reason behind it. It wasn't just a capricious thing that she just said, well, I think I'll describe him this way or that.
Right.
That's one of the things that I found really fascinating about this edition. First of all, that I'd never read these plays before, and that makes and I'd never heard of them before, and I have carried on our radio station old classic radio shows, and we still play modern radio shows that are dramas from Imagination Theater and groups like that. But we used to play the old classic stuff from the 40s and early 50s, and because of that, I was often exposed to material I'd never heard of before or never seen before, but I'd never, ever anywhere seen these plays. And I'm wondering if there are recordings of them somewhere or anything that could be accessed. And I realize you wrote a book. You didn't write a CD, but. So those are the things that went through my head. Wow, can I hear these somewhere?
Yeah.
But just being able
you
to
can.
Read them. Oh, okay.
Can I tell you?
Yes, please.
I'm very happy to promote them because I'm so grateful that the BBC has re-released them. And because this is, we're in the kind of 80th year, 80th anniversary of these
right.
plays. Well, 80th anniversary of the printed edition, a couple more years since the production, but the BBC has re-released the 1967 recordings, which I think are the best recordings available. So they're available on Audible, which you can get through Amazon. If you were, for instance, to broadcast them, you would need permission from the BBC, but they might very happily give them to you, and you could broadcast them.
Wow!
So that's fun for people to be able to listen to them that way, because that's what they're intended to be. They're intended to be heard. They're wonderful to be read. And this edition, of course, you know, I have general readers in mind, people who just love the plays and want to get that kind of backstage tour.
Mm-hmm.
These plays are also read a lot in classical schools. And so this is kind of like a teacher's edition for classical educators or home
yes.
educators. It would be so fun. I mean, you could read them aloud as a family, everybody taking a part and that kind of thing, or in a class setting, that would be real fun. But yeah, I'm so glad they're available through Audible. But I'll just say that the version that is available is cut down a little bit. So they're each about 40 to 43 minutes each on the recordings that are available, but the original plays were written for about 55 minutes. So there are a few things cut out, and I would say a few of my favorite speeches are cut out, probably just for length. But sometimes, you know, within these longer speeches, she really develops a theological idea and that kind of thing. So a few of my favorite bits where her theology is really expressed, you know, were cut. So I, of course, recommend also having the book, but
yes.
I'm very happy for people to listen to the audio versions available now.
Well, I will say that earlier this year, it looked like I was going to be teaching a radio production class. I teach at the School of Journalism at Troy University, and that's where I am
okay.
in the mornings usually, but we're out of class now, so that's why
yeah.
we got to do this in the morning. And I was hoping that they were going to offer it this fall, and I contacted IVP, and they said they would give me a special rate if I needed to buy a couple of dozen so that we could use them in class. And unfortunately,
uh-huh.
the class didn't make. We didn't have enough people sign up for it, but I've got hopes.
Okay.
And when it is offered, I am definitely going to use this edition as one of the textbooks for that, because it's just a really wonderful explanation of how things got done in the golden years of radio, and
right.
and what's involved in doing a radio play as opposed to doing a regular stage play. And a dear friend of mine is the head of our theater and dance department, and I'm going to get her a copy of this book for Christmas, because I think that she'll just be amazed by the writing and having all of your research. You said this was for your PhD, and I've got to mm-hmm. be honest with you. I've had a lot of friends that have earned PhDs. My nickname has nothing to do with actually having the degree. Understand. So I've had a lot of friends say, "Hey, would you read my dissertation? Tell me what you think." You know, and there's one of my colleagues is getting her a PhD from Liberty, so she had to take some theological stuff. And I was a Methodist pastor for 29 years, bivocationally. Mm-hmm. So she said, "Hey, do you have any of these guys? Do you have any of this fella? How do you pronounce his name?" I said, "Would that be Kierkegaard? I guess so. Yes." Do you have any of this? Dietrich Bonhoeffer? Yeah, I got that. You know, and on and on and on. And so I get to read her dissertation, which is lots of fun. But I got to say, the work that you did on this edition is far and above what I've ever seen on anybody else's PhD dissertation.
Oh.
This is really an incredible scholastic work, to have all this background and all of these... little things that flesh out the story of what it was like to write these wonderful plays and what it was like to produce them and what the BBC was going through. Lest we forget,
right.
these are being produced during World War II. And one of the things I never thought about, but certainly made sense when you explained it in here, the BBC, normally speaking, has studios in London, but they had to move because of the Blitz, right?
Right. Yeah. Broadcasting House, which is what they call the building that's the BBC headquarters, was partly, you know, hurt during the Blitz. And so they had to move elsewhere. And so these plays were actually produced in a theater in London. But, you know, there were times, I'm trying to think which play it was, but there was a scene where Mary Magdalene just had one line. And so Sayers had said, like, you know, if it's too much trouble or something for her to come. And but it's like she just couldn't get there because of the trains.
Oh, right.
During the war, there was a lot of slow service and a lot of things that were canceled, you know, even just for protection because of certain areas or war supplies got the preference on the rail line. So it's just really fun to think about these plays within the world of the wartime and what people were thinking and how it really strengthened them during that time.
I can only imagine, you know, for us in the United States, we are fortunate in that we have not had, except for attacks like 9/11 or on Pearl Harbor, and an invasion of the Aleutian Islands during World War II by the Japanese. Other than that, we haven't had a war on our soil since the American Civil War. And so that means we've never had a war on our soil, you know, on mainland America, where airplanes flew over and dropped bombs or missiles were fired and landed on us, like with the V-2s. We don't really understand what it's like to have that sort of devastation occurring all around us and trying to do things that we have to do, get groceries, protect our children, and so forth. And when will our sons grow up to be, will they be old enough before this war is over that they will have to go and all this sort of things. So I think you get a real sense of that in the book, that that for people in the UK, they really desperately needed to be reminded of who's really in charge in the world. As much as it seemed like Adolf Hitler was making all the decisions, they needed to be reminded there was somebody much bigger and much more benevolent than that, and he was not surprised by any of it. And I think this comes across in these magnificent plays so well.
Yeah. One of the fun things, you know, about reading them, because Sayers also gives notes for the actors, which is included. Some of those interesting little wartime tidbits also come through there. For instance, you know, in her instructions to the character named Baruch, who is a zealot. Now, you know, we don't have anything in the Gospels that tells us what the zealots thought or did. We get that from other sources like Josephus. So Sayers creates a character in order to sort of show that kind of stream of what was happening in the culture. But so there's a point where Judas meets Baruch, and Baruch is trying to kind of, eventually he helps kind of lead Judas astray.
Yes.
But in this very first interaction, you know, he's kind of pushing the boundaries, kind of showing what Judas actually thinks. And so there's a point where Baruch says, oh, you know, we just need someone like Jesus. If we could get him at the head of our movement, you know, that's what we need, is like a figurehead that people will march behind. And so in the character notes for Baruch, Sayers talks about how, you know, maybe Baruch saw Jesus like the Nazi party saw Hitler, you know, kind of crazy, but someone that we could use for our own purposes.
Right.
And so that kind of thing, you think, whoa, imagine someone, you know, seeing Jesus like that.
Yeah.
But, you know, it's true. There are lots of people who, of course, saw Jesus from their own perspective, and that's what Sayers really tries to show. They aren't just kind of cardboard cutout or what Sayers calls stained glass people that are just, you know, one-dimensional. They were real people who encountered Jesus in real time and saw him from their own perspective. And so some were wanting to use him or manipulate him. Some were wanting to follow him. Some were, you know, afraid of him. Some were, you know, all different kinds of reactions. But that one, just in the way she describes it and linking it to, you know, how the Nazis might have seen Hitler, at the beginning, you know. Mm-hmm. So it just really brings it home.
Yeah, useful. He would be useful for our purposes. That's kind of the feeling you get. It's so much that we could talk for a couple of hours here covering all the things in your book, and it's just absolutely fascinating. And I was so thrilled. I've been really working with Krista all year long to figure out a time that I could talk to you. And in God's own time, that's exactly what happened.
Great.
It really has been a great pleasure to talk to you and to let you know how much of an impact your book made on me. And I feel like everybody who picks up a copy is going to be just amazed. And I want to ask, is there something that you were hoping that we talked about, that we would talk about in this interview, that I did not ask you?
Well, one thing that might be interesting for listeners to hear, you mentioned C.S. Lewis at the beginning, and he actually reread these plays every year during Holy Week as a kind of devotional exercise. So that might be a nice connection for people. Sayers met him in 1943, so just the same year that the plays were printed in book form, and he had not heard the original broadcast, but Sayers sent him a copy. The plays were rebroadcast in later, you know, years in the 40s, and so, you know, he probably heard parts of them later, but he really loved the printed edition, and so he every couple of years he'd write her and say, as always, I'm rereading The Man Born to Be King during Holy Week. It stands up to this kind of test very well. So it's amazing. I mean, all through the 50s, you know, so it really, for the last 20 years of his life, he reread these plays. So if that sounds like an interesting challenge for people, maybe they could start them now in the Christmas season with the first play, with the three magi, or Sayers calls them the kings, the three kings coming to visit Jesus. And then kind of read them between now and Easter. That would be a wonderful way to read the plays at a nice slow pace. And then also get that wonderful interaction with these stories, but also enjoy Sayers' wonderful way of bringing these gospel stories to life.
What an excellent suggestion. I have to say, Catherine, it's been a great pleasure to get a chance to talk to you.
I look
forward to the next opportunity that we have. Do you want to give your social media contacts or anything like that?
Sure. I have a website, KatherineWeher.com, KatherineWeher.com. You can find links there for the book itself, but also for my other writings. I actually have a YouTube channel. It's just Katherine Weher, same spelling, and I have some videos that relate to Sayers, but also about a number of other things that are mostly in that kind of theology and the arts sort of type of thing. So, yeah, I'd love to have interaction with people through my website or through YouTube. Thank you. Excellent.
Catherine Weher, our guest today on the bookshelf for Christmas Eve. Her book, The Man Born to Be King, the Wade Annotated Edition of Dorothy L. Sayers' classic plays that were produced during World War II. Dr. Weher is the editor, and it's available from IVP Academic. It is an incredible volume, and I think people will be greatly touched and inspired by it. That's a very wonderful thing indeed. Catherine, thank you again for being with us today on the bookshelf, and Merry Christmas.
Thank you. Thank you for having me, and Merry Christmas to you too.
Once again, we've been talking to Dr. Catherine Weher, the editor of The Man Born to Be King, the Wade Annotated Edition of Dorothy L. Sayers' classic plays from World War II that were carried in the BBC. It's from University Press Academic or IVPacademic.com. You can also check out her website, Catherine Weher, KatherineWeher.com. Thanks so much for listening. We're here every week for you. Also invited to check out my podcast on thebookshelf.podbean.com. Until next time, I'm your host, Dave Dockery. Thanks for listening, and God bless. Merry Christmas.